We're very fortunate to have had so much rain the last few days. That's a big relief for all of us. You can take a little bit longer shower, as someone said. Maybe. Anyway, and as you came in, you see that we're preparing for Nancy McClellan's memorial ceremony this afternoon. So I thought I would talk a little bit about how we understand the meaning of birth and death. In the Wycliffe record, the case number 43, the case is called Tozan's No Cold or Heat. It's a very well-known koan, and I know many of you have studied this koan. Before I read the koan, I want to remind us of the three foundations of Buddha Dharma. The three foundations of Buddha Dharma are: one, nothing is permanent or substantial. Nothing is permanent or substantial except nothing. There is no abiding self, is the second one. In other words, there's no soul or permanent ego. And three, all is suffering within the bliss of nirvana. Number three, before the popularity of the Mahayana, was all is suffering. Period. And then when the Mahayana became more well known, or popular, let's say, it was all is nirvana. So these are the two opposites, right, so to speak. And then, but the truer meaning, the more non-dual meaning, is all is suffering within the bliss of nirvana. So this is how we, our non-dual understanding of suffering and nirvana. And then the question comes up, well, we know what suffering is, we think, but what is nirvana? there's no way to say exactly what nirvana is as an explanation, but we say it's the absence of greed, absence of ill will, and absence of delusion. In other words, it's simply our pure existence. So what is pure existence? One question leads to another. So here is a koan for us. A monk said to Tozan. Tozan is Tozan Ryokai. Dongshan, in Chinese, who is the fountainhead of the Soto school in China, our ancestor in China. So a monk said to Tozan, "Cold and heat descend upon us. How can we avoid them?" Tozan said, "Why don't you go where there is no cold or heat?" The monk said, "Where is the place where there is no cold or heat?" Tozan said, "When cold, let the cold kill you. When hot, let the heat kill you." This is the koan. this koan has several levels of understanding. we're first starting to sit zazen, you know, back in the 60s, we thought we understood this koan. And it's not that we didn't understand it, but we understood it on one level, which is when you have pain in your legs during zazen, you become one with pain. If you don't become one with the pain will kill you. When there are no opposites, this is nirvana. Nirvana is the place where all opposites are reconciled. The only reason that we have suffering, I don't say the only reason, but the reason that we cause our own suffering is because we create opposites. This is called the realm of duality. We live in the world of duality, where everything has an opposite. So when we have pain, we want pleasure. So the Shakyamuni Buddha says, the reason why we have suffering, the first noble truth is the truth of suffering. Why we have suffering is due to desire. Not that desire is wrong or bad, it's just that desire creates duality. When there's suffering, the stereotype of suffering is, of the cause of suffering is not having what we want. Having what we don't want. Not being with those people that we want to be with. And being with those people we don't want to be with. And so on and so forth. We live in a world of discontent. I think discontent is a good word for suffering. Good term. So how do we find contentment? Pleasure, creating pleasure does not create contentment. Trying to make ourselves comfortable does not make us comfortable. We're always reaching for something more. Because as soon as you get comfortable, the next step is you're uncomfortable with what you were comfortable with. And then you find another comfort. And then you become uncomfortable with that comfort. So how do we find our true comfort? Which goes much deeper. So, let the cold kill you. I remember when we were starting Tassajara, we had no heat, and we were in a deep valley where in the summertime it's really hot, and in the wintertime it's really cold. And of course, the practice periods are in the winter, and the spring, the fall. So we learned about what the meaning of cold. And the only way we could be comfortable was to let the cold kill us. In other words, to be one with the cold. To not seek an opposite. As soon as you don't like it, you create suffering. As soon as we try to change the situation we are in, if we can't change it, then we suffer. So change what you can, but what you can't change, you have to be one with. So this is why training is about how to deal with suffering. Zen training, Buddhist training, I don't know about the rest of Buddhism, but Zen training is basically about how to deal with a situation, the situation that you are in, without creating suffering or being victimized by the suffering which you create. There are forces which create suffering on us, of course, But the suffering that we create ourselves is the suffering that we talk about. So, why don't you go to the place where there's no cold or heat? Where is that place when there's cold, let the cold kill you? When it's hot, let the heat kill you? There's a koan a few pages down, but does one who dies the great death come back to life again? That's a good koan. But that's a koan about our ego. A koan about how we kill our ego. We have a lot of kills and killing talk in Zen, but it doesn't really mean to kill. It means to bring to life. You know, we have Manjushri sword has a Bodhisattva of wisdom, and he kills and then he brings to life. So killing and bringing to life is the rhythm of our life. You cannot live without dying. So this koan is really about birth and death. In its deeper sense, it's about dying and living. So I don't like to use the terms life and death, because life is not the opposite of death. Birth is the opposite of death, if you want to talk about opposites. Opposite is birth, is the dynamic of our life. And it's what we call life, because birth is happening moment by moment. It's not something that just happened. You say, I was born at such and such a time. That's one moment of birth. That's one event, because we don't have a memory of before that, and we don't have a memory of after dying. So we see our life as this little momentary event bordered by birth and death. Death follows birth, follows death, follows birth, follows death, follows birth. That's the rhythm. And within each moment of birth is the moment of death at the same time. So when we talk about life and death, we usually think about before I entered this world and after I left this world. But birth and death, the dynamics of change are continuous. This is called life, because life is in the center. It's like a coin. Birth is on one side, death is on the other. But birth and death are one coin and happen momentarily at the same time. So as we are sitting here, birth and death is happening. The moment I was talking is gone. The moment you were listening is gone. Will never return. And it's happening all the time. And birth is happening all the time. This is the process of life, which contains birth and death. When life is killing and death is resurrecting. Death is killing and life is resurrecting. Death and resurrection is happening all the time. So this is how we need to perceive our life. It's not just one continuous thing, even though it is. It's one continuous then, yes. Each moment is an eternal moment. Because each moment comes out of emptiness. It's the expression of emptiness. So, what is nirvana? Nirvana is living our life totally and completely. Let life kill you. Let death bring you to life. We always think in upside down ways. We think that death is taking something away and life is giving us something. But these are just two aspects of the same thing. Within death is birth, within birth is death. We don't like the idea of dying. And more or less we like the idea of being born till we run into trouble. And then we say, oh, I wish I was never born. But then things change. Hopefully. So how do we cope with suffering, which is what Buddha's Dharma is about? We can't change, because change just happens. And so what are we? Well, we have no inherent self, because we are subject to change. And since we are subject to change, there's nothing to hang on to. There's nothing to hang on to. So when we let go, which means to die completely on each moment, and be born completely on each moment. So when we throw ourselves into our activity, that's how we create life. To just, when alive, be totally alive. When dead, be totally dead. Not to do something halfway, 50%, 60%, 70%. When we are 100% or 90%, 99% is okay, 98%. Give ourselves totally to our activity, then we receive something totally. If we give a little bit, we receive a little bit. Because giving and receiving is the same thing. Birth and death is the same thing. When suffering comes, when we hang on to something that's going away. That's the nature of suffering, to hang on to something that's going away. It's like when you have one foot on the dock, one foot on the ship. And the ship is going away, what would you do? This is a big, great koan. What would you do? So we say, there's no birth and death. This is the Buddhist understanding. Basically, there is no birth, even though we speak of birth and death as in a dualistic sense. In a non-dualistic sense, there is no birth and death. There's only transformations, endless transformations. So at each moment is birth and death. When we experience it this way, then we become one with life and we don't have so much fear because we are empty. And emptiness is the essence of our existence. So we can understand this through our breathing. Breathing, inhaling, I've talked about this all the time. Inhaling is coming to life. Exhaling is letting go. So in each moment, we inspire and we expire. Inspire, expire, and it's one movement. Up and down is one movement. In and out is one movement. You can't do just one side. It has to be a complete cycle. So we live in this cyclical way. Life is cyclical. We study life as our breath, and it's cyclical. It's not this way. And so this is how the Buddhists developed the understanding of cyclicality, of rebirth. I can't tell you about rebirth, and I can't tell you about reincarnation. I can just myself realize that circularity is the essence of how things work. You don't have square wheels on your car. So, when we let go of our discriminating mind, even though our discriminating mind is what creates suffering, because we're always dividing, and what creates unification is nirvana. It's nirvana within our suffering. It's the oneness within duality. It's realizing that birth and death are the same thing. That cold and heat are one. Just two aspects of one. So where do you find the center? Where do you find that place where heat and cold meet? How do you find the place where past and future meet? There is no such thing as future because it's just an idea and we expect it to keep going. And say tomorrow. I remember Suzuki Roshi had a student who I knew very well. He was kind of a very lazy guy. But he came and he talked to Suzuki Roshi, and Suzuki Roshi, they talked about, you know, what he was going to do. And Suzuki Roshi gave him some advice, and he said, "I'll start doing that tomorrow." And Suzuki Roshi looked at him and he said, "You think there's a tomorrow?" He got enlightened. But he lost it because he was lazy. So I'm going to, you know, there's a talk in Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind by Suzuki Roshi about when he went to Yosemite. Somebody took him to Yosemite. Many people know this talk. It's called Nirvana, the Waterfall. So I'm going to read the whole thing, but it's not very long. He says, if you go to Japan and visit Eiheiji Monastery, which is one of the two head temples of the Soto School in Japan, where Suzuki Roshi studied when he was young, just before you enter, you'll see a small bridge, which is called Hanshaku Kyo, which means half-dipper bridge. Whenever Dogen Zenji, the founder of our school, dipped water from the river, he used only half a dipper full, returning to the rest to the river again, without throwing it away. That's why we call the bridge Hanshaku Kyo, half-dipper bridge. At Eheji, when we wash our face, we fill the basin just 70% of its capacity, and after we wash, we empty the water towards ourselves rather than away from our body. This expresses respect for the water. This kind of practice is not based on any idea of being economical. It may be difficult to understand why Dogen returned half the water he dipped to the river. This kind of practice is beyond our thinking. When we feel the beauty of the river, when we are one with the water, we intuitively do it in Dogen's way. It is our true nature to do so, but if your true nature is covered by ideas of economy and efficiency, Dogen's way makes no sense. So, you know, the emphasis of our practice is not on economy or efficiency. We wash the windows, not to get them clean. The windows are already clean, no matter how dirty they are. We simply wash the windows to wash the windows, which is a stupid idea. It's a stupid idea because we're always thinking in terms of efficiency. But this reminds me of when, in our meal chant, in our meal, when we have formal meals in Zendo, at the end we collect half the water from our little small bowl and drink half and offer the rest to this, we say to the spirits, the hungry ghosts actually. We return the water back to nature. And when we serve someone with a big dipper, we serve toward ourselves instead of away from ourselves. So this is where his talk actually starts. I went to Yosemite National Park, and I saw some huge waterfalls. The highest one there is 1,340 feet high. Only a foreigner would know that statistic. And from it, the water comes down like a curtain thrown from the top of the mountain. It does not seem to come down swiftly, as you might expect. It seems to come down very slowly because of the distance, and the water does not come down as one stream, but is separated into many tiny streams. From a distance, it looks like a curtain, and the water does not come down as one stream, but is separated into many tiny streams. Oh, I said that. So, and I thought it must be a very difficult experience for each drop of water to come down from the top of such a high mountain. It takes time, you know, a long time, for the water finally to reach the bottom of the waterfall. And it seems to me that our human life may be like this. We have many difficult experiences in our life, but at the same time, I thought, the water was not originally separated, but was one with the whole river. Only when it is separated does it have some difficulty in falling. It is as if the water does not have any feeling when it is one whole river. Only when separated into many drops can it begin to have or express some feeling, only when it's separated. Our feelings come from our separation. Our feeling of separation. Individuality. When we see one whole river, we do not feel the living activity of the water. We're just it. But when we dip a part of the water into a dipper, we experience some feeling of the water, and we also feel the value of the person who uses the water. Feeling ourselves and the water in this way, we cannot use it in just a material way. It is a living thing. Before we were born, we had no feeling. We were one with the universe. This is called mind only, or essence of mind, or big mind. After we are separated by birth from this oneness as the water falling from the waterfall is separated by the wind and rocks, then we have feeling. You have difficulty because you have feeling. You attach to the feeling you have without knowing just how this kind of feeling is created. When you do not realize that, you are one with the river. When you do not realize that you are one with the river or one with the universe, you have fear. Whether it is separated into drops or not, water is water. Our life and death are the same thing. When we realize this fact, we have no fear of death anymore, and we have no actual difficulty in our life. When the water returns to its original oneness with the river, it no longer has any individual feeling to it. It resumes its own true nature and finds composure. How very glad the water must be to come back to the original river. If this is so, what feeling will we have when we die? I think we are like the water in the dipper. We will have composure then, perfect composure. It may be too perfect for us just now, because we are so much attached to our own feeling, to our individual existence. For us, just now, we have some fear of death, but after we resume our true original nature, there is nirvana. That is why we say, to attain nirvana is to pass away. To pass away is not a very adequate expression. Perhaps to pass on or to join would be better. Maybe will you try to find some better expression for death? When you find it, you will have quite a new interpretation of your life. It will be like my experience when I saw the water in the big waterfall. We say, everything comes out of emptiness. One whole river, or one whole mind, is emptiness. When we reach this understanding, we find the true meaning of our life. When we reach this understanding, we can see the beauty of human life. Before we realize this fact, everything that we see is just delusion. Sometimes we overestimate the beauty. Sometimes we underestimate or ignore the beauty because our small mind is not in accord with reality. To talk about it this way is quite easy, but to have the actual feeling is not so easy. But by your practice of Zazen, you can cultivate this feeling. When you can sit with your whole body and mind, and with the oneness of your mind and body under the control of the universal mind, you can easily attain this kind of right understanding. Your everyday life will be renewed without being attached to an old, erroneous interpretation of life. When you realize this fact, you will discover how meaningless your old interpretation was and how much useless effort you had been making. You will find the true meaning of life, and even though you have difficulty falling upright from the top of the waterfall, the bottom of the mountain, you will enjoy your life. So through our practice of Zazen, we can actually join with the oneness of our life without being victim of our separation. So this is called having our true freedom. True freedom is to not be a victim of our own discriminating mind. So, if you have one question.
So, when when a person is faced with having to make the decision about euthanizing his dog, or a friend is killed in a violent and unexpected way, is there something wrong with that person's practice if he has great emotion?
Great emotion is great Buddha. But be careful not to be a victim of your own emotions. If your emotion takes over, you can become lost. It's important. A feeling about others is one thing. Our understanding of how things happen is the basis. So when we understand how things happen, then we have some control over our emotion. When we don't understand how things happen, and our emotion takes over, we have no foundation, and we just become lost in grief. Grief is important. Understanding is important. And when grief and understanding balance each other, then we have, we don't become a victim of our feelings or our understanding.
So speaking of Suzuki Roshi and this event that we're all grappling with, he went through a similar event in his life.
Yes.
Yes. Not just a friend, but his wife.
Yes.
So we're looking to him as an example.
Yes.
So in your experience of him, how do you think he grappled with that event as a...
Yeah.
An advanced Zen practitioner.
Yeah, I think his understanding, he had his feelings, his loss, and his tragedy, but he had his understanding. His understanding balanced his feelings. You know, we say, I'm not grappling with Nancy's death. I don't think of it as grappling. Grappling? Why grapple?
I think the violence, the sense of violence, the
yes.
sense of putting yourself in her position, you know, the last few minutes of her conscious life,
yes.
putting yourself in the position of this 18-year-old, I call him a boy because
yes.
that's what he is.
Yes.
How do I work with this boy? How do I work with him? I know I can't work with her anymore, but
yes.
I need to know how I can... He needs me,
mm-hmm.
this kid.
Yes.
And I think he needs all of us.
Yes.
So how do we...
Right.
I know accepting it, I agree with that, absolutely, but...
Yeah. So we have our emotion, and we have our wisdom. So emotion has various aspects like anger, confusion, and so forth. Wisdom says, this happened. There's nothing I can do about what happened. So, and wisdom brings up compassion. So, compassion can absorb all of your emotions. So, we can have revenge for this. That's not, right? No. So, how do we express compassion for this person? Yes. And compassion for the person's family, and compassion for everybody who's touched by this, which is a lot of people. So, compassion and wisdom, to bring forth compassion and wisdom, which is understanding, includes understanding. You can understand to some extent, but you can't understand it completely. Because to go back in the steps is impossible. because the steps reach all the way back to Adam and Eve. So
maybe identifying the need somehow, that something is needed. That's just the only thing that keeps coming up for me, and I'm not quite sure how to
right.
do that.
So, well, through compassion, which brings up wisdom, what can I do to stop this kind of stuff in the world, right? So if you can express it that way, then something positive. How can I bring something positive to this? In other words, it's all negative, right? This guy killed her, right, in this terrible way, and she died. That's all negative. How can I bring something positive to this? To balance the situation.
So that is the question. How do we?
Yes, that's your question. I can't answer that question for you.
But, how do you?
Well, how do I? I'm always doing it. It's not something special I have to do. This is my mode of my life. How to bring peace into the world. That's it. Otherwise, what are we living for? I don't have to do anything special. I just do what I'm doing, which is, look at all the other people, millions of people who are being killed in the world, you can't even access. So, to express, your grief, we should always express our grief, but there's some transformative aspect to grief that brings forth compassion, which tells you what to do. So this is a call for you. What do I do? Yeah. Alan? Oh, no. Oh. Actually, you had somebody behind you. Raise their hand. Judy. But short, Judy. So we have to stop, but Alan didn't.
I just wanted to, I really hear both Shelley's question, which is a lot of our questions, and Sojin's response, and just, which is also really on the mark. And I think that for me, the transformative, there's another catalyzing element, which is actually patience. That the not knowing what the proper response might be, and just feeling it and being able to have the capacity to sit with that not knowing with a confidence that something will arise that will tell me what to do. Not all of us, maybe not Shelley, but to trust that, that's also our practice. We're sitting there without any plan, without any scheme, without any agenda. That's what we're doing moment by moment in the Zendo. And actually, that is also a way to live, trusting that an appropriate response will arise.
Thank you.